You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
There's so much to get to. We'll talk to Scott Pioli, the former executive for the Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs, and of course with the Atlanta Falcons as well, about the Deshaun Watson situation and how that could play out here in the coming weeks. We will get into the Knicks throughout the course of the evening, which I'm very excited about because it's, I understand, a position that you wouldn't necessarily expect me to have, but it has more to do not necessarily with where they are in the standings, but where the true effect of Tom Thibodeau is being felt. But I want to start where the story is tonight, and that is with the utter stupidity of Mickey Callaway and the sign of a larger problem. Why is it so difficult to understand what's appropriate and what's not? It's not like we haven't been told this before. It's not like we haven't seen it before. It's not like you're in a workplace and not taking all sorts of different courses that you have to take, sexual harassment courses, things like that. For anybody who still does not understand what is actually involved in that, why is it so difficult to really get what's appropriate and what's not? For instance, is it that hard to really figure out that telling a journalist who covers your team to come and get drunk with you and you'll tell her everything? Is it that really hard to tell that that's not appropriate? Is it hard to tell that you shouldn't send a shirtless picture of yourself in a hard hat to a female journalist? Or to several, as it turns out. Exerting power over women, harassing them, coaxing them with the promise of information in a job that solely relies on information? How is it still a mystery that that is all wrong? We live, at least I would think, or thought, in somewhat of a new age, one would hope, where you have an age of Harvey Weinstein and Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose and Brett Favre and his stupidity years ago, yet we still seem to learn absolutely nothing from it. Mickey Callaway's a moron. Let me be clear. Mickey Callaway's a moron. I have absolutely zero respect for him. How about the cubes, as Michael was talking about earlier? How about the cubes on Mickey Callaway, who he decides that despite the mountain of evidence of his inappropriate behavior, he still chooses to deny it? Now that's stupidity. That's a guy that once said to a player of his, "Well, you're not a man if you have to consult your wife before bringing home a new pet." But admitting any wrongdoing, despite this mountain of evidence that sits in front of you, that's not gutless? Mickey, your time's up. Just go away. Honestly, just go away, okay? They suspended him today. We all know he's getting fired, and we all know that the reason they suspended him today was because the lawyer said, don't fire him until we can make this look good enough into an actual investigation. They did the investigation. Read the article. Look at all of the text messages. It's all there. The investigation is there. For once, don't worry about the money and the lawsuit in an instance like that. If I'm owning the Angels today, I'm letting the lawyer sort it out later. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it just because I have to do it. I'm sending a message. The Mets had no problem doing it with Jared Porter. Why? Because he admitted what he had done. Mickey's not admitting it, so you're just going to prolong this as long as you can. Stop it. Stop it. You utter embarrassment. The problem is bigger. We know the problem is bigger, and I don't mean to sound like I'm lecturing you, but it's everywhere. It continues to happen all across society, and it continues to be treated among let's just call it the misdemeanors of the office, as opposed to people in offices and businesses across the country and sports across the country taking it more seriously. There are offenders who continue this behavior because the punishment isn't seem to be getting the message across. Look at this dumbass Callaway. He does that in the middle of all the Harvey Weinstein stuff, in the middle of everything else that's going on. But no, I'm Mickey. I got this figured out. I'm going to keep sending those inappropriate pictures to women. God, you're dumb. God, you're dumb. And it's not just that the punishment doesn't get the message across. It's the people that enable the behavior, who say nothing, who do nothing, who don't go and check out people's histories thoroughly enough before hiring them. It's not just about a background check. With as many times as this has come up, with the Mets who were sued for harassment a few years ago when Sandy was there, and Jeff Wilpon was sued. Remember that? We're still not going through the hiring process and figuring out exactly who's a good guy and who's not. And I got to be honest, Sandy Alderson is at fault here. His process is completely flawed. And I guarantee you this, from what I know of Sandy, and I've had many interactions with him over the years, the stupidity of people like Callaway and Jared Porter is absolutely killing him. Yet, he hired them. This is on his record just as much as Mickey Callaway's win-loss record is on him too. If not more so, of course more so. That's why he is at fault in this. That's why the NFL is at fault when they do nothing to punish Dan Snyder and his organization. I'm still waiting for that. Has that happened? Yeah, I don't really think it has. And if it has, it certainly wasn't substantial. I guarantee you this. If someone on Ron Rivera's staff went and tried to steal signals from another team or they were deflating footballs, they would have the investigation of the century. Nope. Just hoping it goes away. And guess what? You know, over the last couple of months, it has. It has just that gone away. Just what they hoped for. All excused because why? Because of money. Do you honestly, for instance, if you're the NFL, do you honestly think you'll lose money if you force Dan Snyder to sell the Washington football team? I know a lot of people that would go back to buying season tickets if they could. Come get drunk with me. I'll give you all the information you want. Don't, and I'll shut you out. The implication, clearly. Same behavior, smack in the middle of the Me Too movement. Brilliant. And here's the thing. The stories not told that continue to go on. You can only hope that people like Mickey continue to get put on blast, because that's a big way in which there can actually be change here. I'm bothered when people say, imagine this was your daughter. You don't have to say that. It's another person that has to deal with this kind of harassment. It shouldn't have to be your daughter automatically because the father is going to have that protective nature of a daughter. Well, that completely changes my perspective. It's somebody's daughter. It's a person who deserves respect, who deserves to be able to go to work and not have to worry about this crap. It's not just baseball. It's not just football. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And what really gets me is that you will have the idiots out there who will say, what about this and what about that? You will have the idiots out there who will talk about, what if she's lying? And the immediate instinct is always, always, to not believe the person making an accusation. And we wonder why people don't come forward on things like this, why women don't come forward on things like this. Last part for me that's laughable. There are those guys right now who are feeling marginalized, persecuted. Oh, it's an attack on us right now. No, guys, it's not. It's an attack on the guys who were jackasses. It's an attack if you enable it. It's an attack if you watch it go on and do nothing. To that thought process, to the men who are feeling marginalized right now, I say this. Fellas, we've had it pretty damn good for a long time, few thousand years now. So what is it? Why are you upset? Are you upset because you're not getting a chance to treat women badly like your forefathers did? Why are you upset when people get called out for bad behavior? Everybody's at fault here. Am I sitting up here on a high horse? No, it's made me look at a lot of different things over the last couple of years. It really has. What did I turn my head to something? Was I paying attention? Was I not paying enough attention? Just, it's not that hard to tell what's right and what's wrong. It's not. And you have to be really, really, really dumb to not be able to tell. Really dumb. Mickey Callaway is really dumb. One of the best conversations I've had about this was with Jen Latta of ESPN. You know her from College Game Day. She's all over the place. Outstanding reporter. And is now co-host on a morning show on ESPN Milwaukee. And Jen's going to join us at 7:30. And I'm looking forward to this because it's just more than anything else, when you hear from people and, you know, hear the stories of what they have to deal with, maybe that's just what has the most effect. And, I don't know what we're going to get into along those lines with Jen, but I know we had a really intelligent conversation that I learned a lot from, and I hope other people do. Your calls next, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Later, we will have Scott Pioli on the show. We will also get into the Knicks tonight as well and exactly where their true development is coming and why Tom Thibodeau really was the right coach, and it's not about the defense. All of that is on the way. Open lines. We'll hit them here shortly. Got a couple of comments coming in on the live stream as well over at ESPN New York 98.7's Twitter handle and on ESPN New York's Facebook page. Jay Castillo checking in with Carlin. Good job, brother. I love the show. This shows a complete lack of leadership and judgment. Look, you know, it's not even about these things. The judgment thing is really remarkable to me. Really remarkable that an adult man can be this stupid. It really is. But as much as people don't want to say it's on Sandy, it is on Sandy too. And I'm sorry, like in real life, it's a similar thing. When you hire somebody and they don't get the job done, it's not just on them, it's on you and your judgment. That's a strike against you. And now this is a couple of them that's happened on Sandy. It's not a good situation. It absolutely is on the people that you hire for not knowing what they're doing. Yeah, I know so many people out there now who would make the argument, well, how are you supposed to know what he's doing all the time? Or how are you supposed to know what he's been doing in the past? Look at the resume. Look at all you have to do is go back and talk to a few people who have been around him. Guys, I got news for you. on the Mickey Callaway front, this was not exactly like trying to spot a comet that shows up once every 76 years. When they say it was the worst kept secret, I mean, I never hear anything. I never hear anything in terms of real rumors. And that was a rumor I always heard. I didn't know it to be fact. I didn't know any specific women who had gone through it with him. But I had always heard that he was somebody that absolutely hit on, not necessarily reporters, but just women nonstop. You know, you hear a lot of things in this business in particular. Some of them turn out to be true. Some of them turn out to not be true. I think about a lot of different aspects of this that are just so frustrating. Because for the guys right now who are so upset about getting persecuted over this, it's not something that is all that difficult to really fix. It's just not. Don't behave like a jackass. And if you see somebody behaving like a jackass, or you know of it, call them out. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. You know, I mean, when you see it, you know it. You absolutely know it. So why is that an attack on you all of a sudden? It's not. It's an attack on behavior. It's an attack on just understanding that you can do your part to help without just standing around and being worried. Now, look, I get it. There are so many women who have been in this position who are afraid to come forward and make a bigger issue out of something for fear of their jobs, for fear of their credibility, for fear of their, if you're in reporting, access, all that stuff, for fear of not getting more opportunities. I know a couple. And it's frightening that you would consider somebody having to go through something like that professionally and then having to be worried about whether or not it's going to affect them adversely. Not the guys who did it. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Couple of the other quotes I wanted to hit. Jarve, our buddy Jarve, five people come forward. And Mickey is claiming that he's completely innocent and the pictures are doctored and there are text messages that were made up. Come on. Like, you talk about not being a man. Be a man and take your responsibility for your own actions. Stop it. Just don't be gutless. That's not even acknowledging that you've done anything wrong. At least admit that. Richard Miller checking in. Chris, the front office is to blame along with Callaway. The front office is to blame not just because they didn't, quote, know about his behavior. And I'm sorry. I find it impossible to believe that the Mets at the time never heard a word about his behavior. When I heard that was a possibility. And I didn't know anything about the reporter's side. I just knew more about the women's side. And if you know of a guy's acting like a jackass like that, and it's getting around the way that it was, how does it not come across your desk? Like, I don't believe for a second that the Mets never heard of it when Mickey was here. I don't believe that for a minute. Now, they may not have heard of it when they hired him, but if they didn't know of it when they got here, are you going to tell me it was only reporters? It wasn't anybody in the organization? Wasn't any women who worked for the team? Wasn't anybody like that? See, that's the thing that we always forget. These are just the people who came forward in this. There are always a lot more that don't. And that's to me what's staggering. Because you know, and I even hate the thought of this, just because it's so stupid, but there are a lot of nervous guys around all of professional sports right now for fear of getting blown up for their behavior. And you know what? Good. I hope they do get blown up for it. Nobody's perfect. I understand that. But there's difference between being perfect and treating other people poorly. And if you've ever been treated poorly, do you wish that on anybody else? No, absolutely not. So where is the empathy there? That's what I just can't understand. Where is the at least trying, and empathy is not the right word, but the at least trying to understand, because having not been in the shoes, never fully appreciate what it is, but you can recognize what's right and what's wrong. Looking to talk to you. Let's get it rolling right now. Also on Twitter. That, of course, at Chris Carlin, at C-H-R-I-S-C-A-R-L-I-N. And the live stream up and running on ESPN New York 98.7's Twitter feed and on ESPN New York's Facebook page. You know, we've spent so much time trying to figure out exactly what's happening with Deshaun Watson and where he's going to end up that we've gotten away a little bit from discussing how the Jets are going to get better in the shorter and longer term, and besides Watson, and how the Giants are going to do the same. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about in the past is the ability of a team to come together a little bit quicker than you would have anticipated if you get the right guys. And much more of this has to do with the draft itself and what Joe Douglas is facing here coming up. Let's just argue for a minute that everything is going to stay status quo. I don't think if I'm the Jets, and I've come around a long way on this, I'm not going to knock them if they were to trade back and to do it, but taking a quarterback at the number two spot, the more experts I hear from, the more talent evaluators I hear from, it just is really starting to feel like that would be a massive, massive mistake. And as much as I like Justin Fields, and I really do, I think he's going to be a really good quarterback. As much as I seem to like Zach Wilson, I have started to really come around. I don't think that he's the answer. My opinion of his ability has not changed that much, but riding out with Sam for a year while the Jets try to get some of the other pieces in place to get better, when you know that this coming season, for a rookie quarterback, even though the Jets will be a little bit better with what they do in the draft, is going to be very difficult for that younger quarterback. Aren't you, in essence, even if you get, let's say, Devontae Smith, with the second pick or the fourth pick if you trade back or whatever. Even if you get somebody like that, younger players walking in the door and instantly making you better, that's few and far between. What are you always looking for with draft picks and such? You're looking for development. You're looking for getting better as the season goes along. We still need to see more from Mekhi Becton, you know that? We still need to see more from Denzel Mims, a lot more, before we know what he's definitively going to be. Heck, we still need to see more from Quinnen Williams. And he's been here for a couple of years. But I just look at this and I think, well, if you're not going to be infinitely better next year, depending on what you do in free agency, if you cannot reshape an entire offensive line, an entire offense in 1 year. So if you give Sam the improved weapons and the improved protection, but you know that it's not going to ultimately be all of the pieces in place that you need, shouldn't that be able to tell you what you need to know about Sam? Shouldn't it? Shouldn't that, for everybody that has wanted to give him another opportunity because he hasn't had enough around him, and I've argued he hasn't elevated anybody around him either. If you're going to take this last shot, the Jets are better off taking a last shot with Sam than taking a new shot with a rookie quarterback. Now, look, either one of these guys could turn out to be stars. None of us know, right? But ultimately, if I'm the Jets at this juncture, looking at my lack of positional strength on this roster, or strength, period, on this roster, looking at everything in front of me, and I'm going to expect a rookie quarterback to go out there and instantly be better and instantly develop quicker and start to elevate other guys, why is that fair to him as opposed to Sam? See, Sam, I think you can look and say, he's been in the league 3 years. We could talk all you want about it being a whole nother offense and all that. Like, I'm sorry, you got to adapt. Coordinators are changing all the time in the NFL. Coordinators are changing all the freaking time. So yeah, you have to adapt. And when you're a superstar player, they adapt to you. A coordinator adapts to Aaron Rodgers. It's not the other way around. But when you're a guy like Sam Darnold, sorry, onus is on you to get better. Onus is on you to pick up that system quickly. Onus is on you this year to turn and make the players around you better. If I throw a rookie quarterback into that situation this year, am I helping him? When it might be two guys that I don't necessarily have the utmost faith in, when it wasn't the no-brainer that Trevor Lawrence is going to be? No, I'm not helping him at all. I'm not helping my football team at all. At the very least, if you're going to sit there and tell me that Sam's pretty good when he has better players around him, he will have some better players around him this coming season through free agency and through the draft. It's not going to be a completed product, but that should be enough for Sam to elevate other people, to elevate other players, because that's what a great quarterback does. Me? Not sold on him in the least. Not in the least. I'm really not. I think he is a third-tier quarterback, somebody that when the conditions are nearly perfect around him, you can win with. But I don't think that he's somebody that is going to make a lot of his teammates that much better. So what I'm saying is, while I know that this coming year is going to be a growing year, then I may as well let Sam go and be the guy this season and give him one last shot. I don't think it's him. But why would I go and draft somebody and throw him into the mess when that obviously was the situation the first time around? And the Jets got worse. And Sam got worse after his first year. I think for right now, if it's truly what a lot of evaluators say, that Sam is a better option than Justin Fields or Zach Wilson, then okay, I'll play that out. I'll let that play out. I'll figure it out, and I'll find out whether or not he truly can be that guy that, fair or unfair, I have yet to see. So let's find out. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Would you rather go with a rookie quarterback this coming season if it's not going to be Deshaun Watson? Or would you rather go with Sam at this point? To me, I have come around on this idea just because if I'm not sold on either of those two guys, if either of those guys isn't Trevor Lawrence to me, then I'm certainly not blowing a draft pick on them. Maybe they are sold. I don't know. But I would ride this out, improve this team as much as I can on offense, improve this team as much as I can, period. But get this team better on offense. Stop listening to the whining about the lack of playmakers. Yeah, we get it. There aren't enough of them. And hopefully, with a little more to work with, Sam can actually show that maybe he is the guy you want long term. Maybe that can happen. Me? Not sold in the least. Not in the least. Open lines. Let's go on Darnold, on the Jets, on where it's all heading. Mark is in Newark. I think I know where this is heading. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Chris. Good to talk to you, man.
Where you been?
Well, you know, sometimes I take little hiatuses.
That's okay. What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm going to surprise you. I'm usually a hard stance. You know that. But you are, too. And I'm in lockstep with you, but just for a slightly different reason. I've been giving this a lot of thought, Chris. We're going to have that 49ers offense with its own new tweaks provided by the OC. And what I know about that offense is that it's a ground-and-pound offense in disguise with a lot of bells and whistles. But it's, mm-hmm. it's strictly a ground-and-pound offense, a lot of 49 toss right and 48 toss left involved. See Mostert for that.
We called it 48 sweep.
Okay, same thing. But you know, but they run it a lot.
It was all like PALT.
With a lot of pre-snap motion. I think that it doesn't necessarily – now, you know how I feel about Sam. I'm not even going to go there. But I will say that I like Justin Fields, and I would love to have Deshaun Watson. But if we're going to run that system, which proven is a Super Bowl system, Chris, then it doesn't require your quarterback to have that dynamic run X button type thing. It just does not. So that being said, if they were to decide to do that, I would like to go with the tackle and then run that offense, because then we don't need that. We don't need that extra histrionics from the quarterback. What do you think?
Yeah, listen, I get where you're coming from. To
oh,
me,
by the way, they used to tight end a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What tight end did they have? Chris Herndon?
Well, I'm not big on Herndon, but I do like Griffin. He's a big body, and he's really old.
Ryan Griffin's a serviceable guy. He's helpful.
Yes, he is. I like him, but if we use him more, he wasn't used. Chris, you know that.
This past year, he wasn't used enough. But he was also banged up, too, wasn't he? Was he banged up this past year? He was. But I look at him, and I don't think he's going to be the difference maker in the offense. If you're going to use the tight end more and expect him to be more productive, then I think you're looking more at that being Herndon, and that's why I don't really buy into Herndon being
that. I don't think that. I think that Griffin can be a Kittle's type, to be honest with you.
You know, it's my bad. It was last year that he was banged up. He missed a couple of games. This year, he only missed one game.
So that's my take. I mean, I'm willing and would be more than satisfied if they went that route, but I would definitely go with the tackle if that's the case.
Here's my only problem, Mark, and thanks for the call, as usual. If you take the tackle, you're going to end up in a position of paying two tackles on the offensive line. And to me, if Becton is going to be your guy, your anchor of that offensive line, how often is it? Is it really all that often that you see two big-time players at the tackle spot? You saw it when the Browns went and drafted Wirfs, and it was at Wirfs, yeah, and then they had signed Jack Conklin, which is what the Jets wanted to do, but it was a little bit different. It was a little bit different because you know, they, again, it's, they have one player that they're not paying yet, and they could afford to go pay Conklin. But if you're going to have two guys that are going to come up pretty much at the same time in a couple of years at left and right tackle, I think we can all agree left tackle is much more important at this point. Not that right isn't. I just don't know how much of your resources, when you're trying to fill out the entire offensive line, you can really put into the right tackle spot. Like, that has to be a guy who can just kind of settle in and get the job done. A mid-level to above-average guy. I don't need two stars at tackles, which is, in essence, what you'd be doing. Huey in St. Louis is next. Huey, what's going on, brother? How are you?
My man, Carlin, how are you, dude?
I'm great. What do you got?
So real quick before I get to the whole Met thing, as a Giant fan, I try not to comment on Jet things, but I agree with you with Donald. I don't think he's a long-term answer. The one thing I would say is a lot of good quarterbacks have been drafted in the last, you know, several years in that 10 to 15 range, Mahomes, Allen, you know, Watson and Lamar Jackson. So you could trade back if you needed to and still get one of those guys, Wilson or whatnot. But I agree, in theory,
if you're trading back, somebody's trading up to take one of the two quarterbacks. Yeah.
Possibly, but some of these, you never know. This wide receivers, this draft is so heavy on receivers. And I've seen so many different predictions on where guys are going. But, I try not to comment too much on the Jets stuff. My brothers will be upset with me for even talking Jets. they do. We go back and forth on that. But here's my take on the whole situation with the Mets today. So I didn't hear your take at all tonight on it, but I find it a little tough to take that Alderson could get a lot of blame for this. I know there's been two examples here in the last couple of weeks, but prior organizations hired both of these guys. And I think you have to assume that they had done their due diligence. And again, I feel bad for the victims here, but if they're not putting it out there with these organizations, there's no way to know. And that's what I think makes it equally tough. And what I found
like I said before, with Callaway, like I had heard, and I didn't hear it was with reporters. I had heard that there was, you know, that he had, you know, chased women a bit. And if I hear something like that, that means a lot of people have heard it and or seen it. Now, because I'm the last guy to know anything when it comes to that kind of thing.
So does that come back? Because everything I've read, it's been that Jeff Wilpon was aware while Sandy was out after his cancer diagnosis. So does that mean that Wilpon covered up for him and allowed him to remain with the Mets? Is that what it appears to you?
I don't, it's hard for me to say covered up. Like, that's a tough one. But
yeah,
let me put it another way. Would I put it past him? Absolutely not. I mean, Jeff was involved and he wasn't harassing a woman in terms of like how Mickey Callaway was, but he was making a very uncomfortable work environment for the person who ran their ticket office.
Right.
And he got hit
in
that lawsuit pretty good.
He's a vile human being. I mean, I think we all know that. Now, what's interesting with Callaway too is
Vile's rough. I mean, he's done a lot of good things too, but I also, Vile's rough, but is he your favorite? My favorite? No.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and maybe that was a little tough because, again, I know they've done some good things for the city. Now, with regards to Callaway, what's interesting is he didn't resign and they didn't fire him. I mean, part of the problem is California law favors employees, and a lot of industries have been hit very hard recently because California is such a pro-employee state as opposed to employer. So that's part of this thing here. It's very difficult to fire someone. And again, it's the interesting piece of this too will be how it plays into where these supposed incidents took place in other states. If the Angels truly can fire him.
Like I said though, Huey, I think that I get it. Like, there's no question as to why they didn't fire him immediately. They obviously talked to the lawyers, and the lawyers said, "Don't fire him. At least make it look good." You know, like you're doing an investigation. I get that. I just think that. Listen, it's the law, but how much is Mickey Callaway going to get out of them once all the evidence comes forward, when the evidence is as clear as day?
It's very little. And again, he's not going to, odds of him working in baseball again are pretty slim at this point. yeah, I would think. Yeah, unless he goes, you know, into the Dominican or whatever, and or you know, so, one of those other leagues. But you know, so going forward, you know, I think, you know, the league clearly has to take a deep dive into hiring process here. But it does come back to, you know, the thing I have a hard time with here is an organization like the Diamondbacks hire Porter. And then Mickey had been hired by the Indians. And again, Terry Francona is one of the better guys in the game of baseball. So did he, I'd love to know, it's probably going to come out what these guys knew too. Right. And then how far down when you're interviewing, you know, I heard another station today saying, well, you have to go and talk like in a college town. If you're recruiting a kid, you know, NFL is looking to draft a kid. They go, they talk to the bouncers at the bar and these different things. Well, I don't know that you can necessarily talk to everybody, or you can't even go to some reporters, because then they're going to say, hey, there's a scoop here on the Mets are going to try to hire this guy. I think it's going to be very tough for them to be able to do as much research as they believe.
That's where that line is, you know, and Huey, that line. When somebody's going to go to a reporter like that, the first thing they're going to say is, this is off the record.
They're
trying to get a feel for it right away. And if the reporter wants to talk to them about it, they will. If they don't, they won't. I think a lot of times what you'll find is, you know, we've seen some reporters who are not necessarily great at this kind of thing. But for the most part, reporters are good and earn the trust of the people that they work with on that front.
Pretty ethical on that, Ed. So let me, one last question for you, Chris. So what do you think, how does Alderson come out of this now?
I don't know if Sandy's getting fired or not, but this is not good. Like this is, and I tell you what, I was a little thrown back by the Cohen statement too, of, you know, this would never happen under my ownership. Well, Steve, you're getting hit for it over at .72. Let's dial it back on the rhetoric a little bit. You know, that's fine. But you know, as far as Sandy's concerned, I don't think Sandy's getting fired, but I mean, you got to do something, don't you? You have to come out here. You have to, I think if you're Sandy, you know, Sandy didn't even apologize for accidentally outing the country that the young woman in the other story was from. I mean, you got to apologize for it. You got to come out and say, look, and it, trust me, Sandy dealing with stupidity is not a pretty sight. I would not want to be, you know, if Mickey was still in this job and Sandy found out about this stuff after the fact, like it would drive him up the wall. But again, it's on him. That's the thing. Like GMs get fired all the time for the people they hire because they don't win enough games. What about for their character?
Well, with Callaway, too, he was one of the lowest paid managers in the game. I always thought that the Wilpons went with him because he was cheap. And they could argue that he was a pitching guru with, at the time, with the staff you had there, with still, you know, the young guys. So that was always my thought.
Well, I don't think anybody made that call. To be fair on that front, and thanks for the call, Huey, as always. I don't think that necessarily had as much to do with it, because what managers are getting paid big bucks these days? Not many. Like Aaron Boone's not making $1 million. You know, it's because they don't value the manager. I don't think it was necessarily because he was cheap. I think anybody they hired wasn't going to be getting big-time money. It took Terry Collins a few years to get over $1 million. If he did, I think he barely did. I'm not positive of that. Guy took him to the World Series, so you would think at some point you deserved it. How about this? I mean, I don't know if I wouldn't call it breaking news. I guess,
kind of breaking news?
Kind of. Yeah, kind of. Multiple NFL sources. This is telling Vincent Bonsignore. He is, of course, of the Las Vegas Journal Review Journal. Multiple NFL sources indicate to me that Derek Carr is a hot commodity, and it is expected that multiple teams will pursue him via trade. That could lead to the Raiders pursuing Deshaun Watson in a blockbuster trade. So they're talking about the possibility of a three-team trade, or the possibility of trading away Carr, who they suggest could get two first-round picks. I mean, if you're giving up two first-round picks for Derek Carr, I'm sorry. You should not be he should absolutely not be anywhere near running an NFL team if you're going to give up two first-round picks for Derek Carr. You got to move. I mean, honestly, quit. You don't belong running a team. You just don't. Derek Carr is excitingly average at best. At best. And if the Raiders are able to swing that and Gruden is able to swing that and find a way to get Deshaun Watson to Vegas, I mean, that's a ridiculous heist on his part. You know, I don't know what they'd have to give up. I can only imagine. But if Gruden gets Watson and they do it in the midst of getting rid of Carr and they actually just flip picks on Carr and send those picks and whatever else for Watson, oh, my God, they did an amazing job. They did an absolutely amazing job. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Open lines, let's get to it. I want to spend a few minutes, though, on Tom Thibodeau and how everybody's been so excited about the Knicks. Now, first and foremost, awfully quiet last few days. Just saying. Losing games. I don't hear from you. Whatever. You know, I told you that this is just not a very good team. And that seems to be something that you struggle with accepting. The Knicks only truly have one way to win games, and that is to play superior defense. And when they do that, as would be the case with anyone in the league, of any sort of talent on the roster, doesn't matter who they have, if you're going to play superior defense, you're going to have a chance to win. That's just all there is to it. And the way the Knicks play on defense, man, it's super impressive. I give them all the credit in the world, most nights. But what we've seen here a little bit lately, the Knicks are not capable of outscoring teams by throwing up big numbers. So that thought process has to go away. They're not capable enough because they don't have enough talent yet. But what we do see, and what I love about what Tom Thibodeau is doing, is the development of the talent that they do have. And I'm not talking about Julius Randle throwing up near triple-doubles, okay? I'm talking about R.J. Barrett. See, to me, that excites me. That gets my juices flowing. He's somebody that when the Knicks got stuck with the third overall pick, I thought, okay, this is not going to be all that bad. They're going to be okay. This is a talented player. And I was so disappointed in what we saw in year one and how that all played out. And I granted, he averaged 14 a game. That's fine. But what's got me so excited right now is you cannot just see the difference in his ability to score more points. But you can see how a coach is building his confidence and developing his abilities. Building his confidence, R.J. Barrett is working hard. And Tom Thibodeau is rewarding him with that. You look at the minutes this season, and they are way up. 5, 6, 7 minutes up per game. Yes, points are up, rebounds are up, assists are up, shooting percentage is up. He's still not the world's best shooter. Certainly his three-point shooting is not great. But he's still a guy that is getting better. And this was one of the big reasons why you hired Thibodeau. Not just because you were going to be able to get a team to play great defensively and get them to buy in. Because he's going to take what you have, and the guys who want to get better are going to respond to him. That's what we're seeing with a centerpiece player in R.J. Barrett. I'm so thrilled by that. I honestly am thrilled by that. That, to me, is the biggest development of the season. It's not just the fact that they're winning a few more games here and there, and that they might get into a play-in type game, which I still don't even think they're good enough to get into. I really don't. You know, I told you to give me to 25 games, and we're approaching that, and you haven't convinced me yet. okay? Are they better than last year? Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of things are better than last year. We're not setting the bar terribly high, and I know it's been a long run of disaster after disaster for this organization, but at the very least, let's set the bar a little bit higher. Can we not?
The Knicks are back.
Oh, my God. Not yet. 9-13 is not back. So here we are at 22 games, and I don't think I'm going to be sitting here at 12-13. They're going to rattle off three in a row. Don't see that. I am really, really, really excited at the notion that the talented young players that you have are going to get better. Am I worried about Obi Toppin? Not remotely. Not remotely. The best part about what Thibodeau is doing is these guys are going to earn their minutes, which brings me to a bit of a troubling development. And I know this was written about today, and I meant to bring this up last week. Kevin Knox? Not seeing him quite as much. Wouldn't that be really troubling when the Knicks need shooting in the absolute worst way? Okay, 21 years old, 20 years old, whatever he is. You're not giving up on him that quickly. I understand all of that. Okay? There is not a lot to feel good about with Kevin Knox right now. And if he's not getting minutes at all in this situation, what does that tell you? Again, I always go back to this. Coaches want to develop, right? And sometimes in the league, it's a little bit different. Tom Thibodeau wants to win every damn game. The basic tenet of coaches that we forget all too often, and we start thinking about agendas, is this. Coaches put the players on the floor that they believe give them the best chance to win. That's it. That's it. Tom Thibodeau right now is putting the players on the floor that he feels are giving his team the best chance to win, and Kevin Knox is not one of them. Neither's Frank Ntilikina, for that matter, but I have not been a believer at all in Ntilikina in his entire time here. As far as Knox is concerned, when they drafted him, I was a wait-and-see guy about it. I wasn't excited like I was this year about Quickley and about what we're seeing in Obi Toppin. I thought Obi Toppin was a tremendous pick, and I still do. That one will take some more time. We're watching Barrett develop now. These other guys will get better. What this tells me is that Kevin Knox is not getting better. Whether it's on the defensive end, do you think that if Thibodeau thought Kevin Knox was going to make them a better offensive team, he'd put him out there? Of course he would. They need to score. They don't have any shooters besides Quickley. They really don't. So that is the alarming development this season. But I am certainly more happy. I don't care the amount of games that the Knicks win right now, even though they obviously do, as they should. I care about development of young players, and I'm seeing it with R.J. Barrett. And I'm seeing Quickley have a really good start to his career so far. I am sure that he will hit a rookie wall at some point. But Barrett, I know it's a small step forward. That's the step forward that I'm excited about. That's the one. Open lines, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Listen, Knicks fans, I'm here for you. It's gone silent again after losing the last couple. Like, I don't hear from you guys when they lose, and that sucks because it makes me think a little bit less of you. Not much. I mean, look who's talking to you here. But you get the point. We show up in the good times and the bad. And I'm sure when they're rolling, I'm sure if they beat the Bulls tomorrow night, you'll be all over me. That's great.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.